legend lives on from the... Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter, joined by John Rurick, Craig Mauger, Representative Sam Singh, and Lauren Gibbons. I saved you for last because it's because of you we have the new intro music. Just today only, though.
That's only today. That's really too bad.
We don't want our permanent song to be that of a sinking ship.
No, I'd rather not. You know, this is the first time we've ever had a podcast on the date of the anniversary of the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Oh, well, that is really exciting, and I'm glad that I was here for this moment.
You were the impetus.
I'm so pleased.
I don't know if this is a good analogy to bring up now. Sinking ships.
Sinking ships. What happened on Tuesday? What happened on Tuesday? I think a lot of us were surprised. Sam, what you guys were kind of confident going in that you were going to pick up some seats. You didn't. What's your read on exactly what happened?
Well, again, I think one of the things we saw as we've been doing our analysis since Tuesday is we had a very difficult time, you know, obviously getting that turnout at the level we had hoped and expected it to be at. We, lost 9 seats by a total of about 7,400 votes. And so when you're that close in all of these seats, including, 58 votes in the Colleen Lamonte seat, 310 votes here with Teresa Abed, we were obviously in the game. But the premise behind our work and the work of our candidates was that we would have better turnout than we did in 2010. And obviously that wasn't the case. And so, we have to take a look at what happened there. Part of it could be message. Part of it was a national narrative that kept people at home. Obviously, when you gerrymander the seats the way the Republicans did 3 years ago, you have to have a decent turnout to be able to overcome that gerrymandering. And so obviously what ended up happening, on Tuesday is their gerrymandered maps, protected their seats, even though 51% of the state voted for state House Democrats. And so we see 2016 obviously as an opportunity because we will have significant voter turnout in a presidential, especially if you have somebody like Hillary Clinton on the top of the ticket. And so there is that opportunity for us to overcome those gerrymandered districts.
It makes it a lot harder, though, with the numbers being where they are right now, doesn't it? It doesn't.
One thing you have to see is that a lot of the seats that we played in were second-term Republicans who will now be term-limited out. So those are going to be a whole set of open seats. I imagine that some of our candidates who ran for these seats this election will be ready to run again in 2016, knowing that there will be a presidential election to help them get across the finish line. And so as we move forward, we're going to take a look at all those seats. Obviously, a significant number of them will be open. There was only 2 Republican open seats that we lost, and in both of those instances, those were competitive. But again, you're going to have a whole variety of open seats because there's a whole group of people that came in that 2010 wave that will be term limited out. So that's where our opportunity lies.
How do you think Lon Johnson did here? Obviously the turnout wasn't what he expected it to be. You could really make the argument that he overpromised and got people excited when maybe they really shouldn't have been as excited.
Well, again, I think if you take a look, we have new systems in place at the party. We have done more with technology. We've done more with grassroots fundraising. We saw more money in Democratic races across the state. So those were all very positive things. But I think not only here in Michigan, but also across the country, there was a suppression to some degree of Democrats wanting to come out and vote. That we saw. So it's not only a Michigan problem, it was a kind of nationwide problem. And so when you saw, obviously the Democrats lose control of the U.S. Senate, a lot of those seats, we thought those races would be much more competitive. They weren't. And that turns out because of the lack of our people coming out to vote. And so I think, Lon has to do things as a party, is take a look at what they did, all the different types of systems they had in place, what worked, what didn't, and then how do you retool for 2016?
Yeah, I'm not necessarily convinced that Lon did a bad job. It seems like if you look at, let's say, the state board races, I know they don't mean much as far as governing and whatnot, but he was able to get more Democrats out, I think, than Republicans. I believe that the independents swung this race and that independents are more likely to support incumbents as long as they're doing a decent job and completely not failing.
I think that's absolutely correct. If you take a look at that 51% I mentioned earlier in state house races, that basically also lines up with the state board for university boards and the Board of Education. We've got about 51% of that vote. And you're absolutely right. Those people that would consider themselves independent, moved back to Snyder at the end. They were questioning where they were going to be the 2 weeks up into the election, and that's why you saw those poll numbers really tight. But when they actually went into the polls themselves, I think they will have voted for Snyder in the end. But again, we did have a turnout, but again, it wasn't the numbers where we had to have to be able to overcome the gerrymandered maps. And so even if we were in 2010 numbers, if there's two or three of those seats that we'd probably pick up if they would have just had normal 2010 numbers and not obviously less numbers than we had expected.
I think universally, Democrats and political insiders kind of agree that Lon had the right strategy. That what he was trying to do was the right move to take. I think the issue that he's going to run into, and maybe issue is putting it lightly, is that he kind of overpromised and gave some statistics out that weren't exactly accurate to what was happening. Like saying we're up 100,000 votes on absentee ballots. That I don't think that was exactly accurate to what was happening. I think that's kind of the issue. And then that affects everything. I mean, if you have this turnout that you're working off of, that's going to affect your polling because you're going to assume that the electorate is going to look a certain way. And then you're going to think we're in some races maybe we're not in, or we've got a lead in a race that maybe we don't have. I mean, that can shift everything. So kind of when you throw these concrete numbers out there, that's where the problem comes in, I think.
Yeah, so does Lon then suffer some type of credibility challenge maybe next go around? Or does he just keep the expectations internal?
Well, again, I think, I've not had a chance to talk to him since the election. I've heard that he's running again for, renomination. I'm expecting that he would be renominated again. I think the things that you saw happen in Michigan are similar to things that happened, across the country, that this was a wave election. We were all sort of hoping that it wasn't a wave election, but I think in the end it was. Okay. And so I don't think you can, blame any one individual for things that happened across the country. Things about the president, the interactions of the president, things like Ebola, for example, that all created, I think, an environment that was not helpful to getting Democrats out to the polls.
Did you guys play in too many seats?
I don't think so. I think we played in enough seats. I think there were some people who supported us, who wanted us to play in more seats than we did. But I think we played in the right number of seats in the end result. Now, could we have done a little bit more in different districts? I think we'll do that type of analysis. But I was very pleased with the amount of money we were able to raise, even though we were in the minority. Pleased with the candidates that we recruited. I think they're all top-tier candidates. They all worked very hard. But again, when you take a look at Democrats not showing up, Oakland County was one great example. We had two pickup opportunities there. The polling was showed that they were very tight. But in the end result, we didn't necessarily see the Democrats coming out in Oakland County the way we had anticipated. And so I wouldn't be surprised if you don't see a number of these candidates coming back in 2016 when they have a presidential swing that will help them get across the finish line.
Talk a little bit about, you must have been thinking about it already this week, in the position you're in now with the numbers you have, does your strategy change as a minority party going into this next cycle, or just from a legislative standpoint?
Well,
messaging standpoint?
I think from a messaging standpoint, we'll continue to, at points when we can find common policy with the Republicans, work across the aisle. I think we were able to do that with Medicaid expansion. We were able to do that with the minimum wage and some of the budget issues that we've had conversation about. So my hope is going into this next term that we'll have a lot of opportunities to work across the aisle. Now, in points in time where we, don't have the same set of values on an issue or we disagree, I think we'll continue to be a loud voice. And I'm committed to being that voice along with Tim Grimmel to make sure we show that contrast between Republicans and Democrats. Because, again, in this election, we had 51% of the state, again, voted for Democrats in the legislature. So to somehow suggest that, that the state is somehow Republican or somehow red, that's not the case. Obviously, with the Gary Peters resounding win, that also reinforced that. So we'll continue to have that large conversation about where we should be going as a state. And I hope we can work together on common issues. But when we can't, we'll make sure our voice is heard.
to a certain degree, this question is Monday morning quarterbacking. But if you guys knew the turnout was going to be what it ended up being, if you knew the feelings toward the president were kind of going to be the overriding storyline of this election, do you think you guys, the strategy should have been, let's try to gain a couple seats, let's protect our incumbents, let's throw everything into maybe picking up one, putting ourselves in a better position for 2016, putting pressure on the Republicans who now have this Tea Party contingent and they're going to need to work with us more? I mean, do you think that that was a strategy in retrospect that should have been the one to go with? Or if you knew everything that you know on this day, the Monday after the election week?
Yeah, I think if you would have told me that, you know, turnout was going to be lower than 2010, we probably would have made some different decisions. But again, none of our polling suggested that turnout was going to be lower. You know, you had a very competitive gubernatorial race that should have shown a higher turnout than 2010. Obviously, the 2010 election wasn't a competitive race. People had already assumed that Governor Snyder had won that race. And so since that wasn't the case, you know, one would think that this would come out. But I will tell you that in all of our incumbent seats, we ran very aggressive incumbent protection programs. They worked very hard. We put in the resources. If you go in and ask the people how many pieces of mail did they get, how many TV commercials did they see, they were all very, you know, competitive. Probably too many, right? But again, that's where you know, we lost one seat with Colleen Lamonte with 58 votes, right? The Teresa Abed seat with 310, you know. And so in the end, it was turnout. It wasn't our strategy, because our strategy was, you know, to showcase them what they've done, and they were great candidates. But unfortunately, in those districts, we didn't have as many Democrats show up as even in 2010.
All right. Very good. Sam Singh, join us. Thanks for joining us for this segment of the podcast. Bobby Shostak is coming up next.
Joining me on the other end of the line is the chair of the Michigan Republican Party, Bobby Shostak. Thanks for joining us today, Bobby. Appreciate it.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
Well, we heard a lot of talk going up to the election last week about this Democratic turnout that we were going to see. At the end of the day, it didn't really turn out that way. But I think what maybe got missed in the whole talk was what the Republican Party was doing. Tell us about the Republican Party turnout and what you guys were doing to draw people to the polls, and if you thought it was successful.
Sure. You know, our whole game plan early on, right after the 12 elections, was to take a look at everything that we do in terms of our ground game and our political plan and revamp that going forward so that we would be as strong as we can be in the 14 elections, knowing that we had more Republicans to protect on this ballot than in our history. So, you know, we got our plan included getting our offices opened early, which we did during 2013, including opening an office in the city of Detroit, developing a new technology tool that would be a precinct-level operation that would do two things for us. One, help our volunteers build out more voter contact on a peer-to-peer, friend-to-friend basis using Facebook, and at the same time allow our folks in the various offices to have good oversight in the precincts to make sure we're getting turnout in the areas that are most important to our success. And as a result, you know, we knew and we expected a traditional turnout for a gubernatorial year. We weren't expecting record numbers. It's just not, you know, not possible, not likely. And we were right on where the turnout would be. And we also didn't go out making lofty expectations public about our turnout machine. We knew that we'd have a governor with a good record that he'd need to go out and defend. That if negatives were thrown at him, that we needed to be ready for it, and that we would do all that we needed to do to win. And, you know, that's what turned out.
What did you make of the fact that the university posts went Democratic? And is that a sign that the Democrats had maybe a better turnout than the Republicans?
No, not at all. I think what that really amounted to was, you know, it was a close race. You know, the governor won with 50.9%. You know, you need to have a strong top of the ticket finish, you know, where you are able to carry the rest of the ballot with you. And it's just, it's very hard to do. I mean, Michigan is a Democrat leaning state. You know, we can't forget that. And we went into this election knowing that, which is why we knew we had to work extra hard to get our message across and carry more votes over the finish line on the Republican side at the top of the ticket. And as we work down ballot, you know, it's harder and harder to keep those folks from either crossing over or just losing interest down ballot and not voting completely. But no, I think that our machine did what it needed to do relative to the governor's race, and we needed to get a wider swing at the top by the governor in order, I think, to have carried enough down ballot in the partisan races.
You know, the Democrats made a lot of their voter-to-voter contact where they would use technology to get folks in certain neighborhoods to talk to their neighbors and ask them to encourage them to get out to the polls. You guys had something similar going on at the time, didn't you?
Yeah, our program was a friend-to-friend, neighbor-to-neighbor, peer-to-peer program. Trusted individuals, trusted relationships would influence voters more than anything else. And so by using our My Team dashboard, which is what we developed with CompuWare, later Lockbridge, for the state party, it came with input from Tea Party groups, campaigns, party activists from, you know, over the last several elections to tell us what they needed to do more efficiently to get out and touch voters. And so we were able to make well over 4 million voter contacts between door knocks and using our technology tool, the My Team dashboard, phone calls, and so forth, more than ever before in our history, because it is that we were exponentially able to grow our contact base. So we had more people working longer, deeper, wider, with more contacts around the state. You know, think about this as your Facebook friends. You may live at, say, in Lansing or Livonia and have friends in Alpena or Traverse City that are following you. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, you're helping influence voters across the state who are your friends, your peers, not just people that live necessarily in your precinct or in your neighborhood.
Obviously, you were taking a look at what the Democrats were doing. Was there anything that the Michigan Democratic Party did that particularly struck you as being innovative or something that you weren't expecting them to do as far as them getting out their votes?
You know, not really. I mean, it's not a new phenomenon that there's drop-off from presidential years to gubernatorial years. And they were making a big deal over this absentee ballot effort to get folks that normally don't vote to vote. And, you know, we kept saying to ourselves, are they really going to turn out any new voters? When, in fact, we were doing, you know, really much of the same thing of talking to more voters but longer periods of time. You know, we got out there basically in the spring of 13 with this effort. They started in 14 with their effort in the second half of the year with their absentee effort. And it just didn't seem like they were going to have any kind of impact. In fact, we were monitoring and data mining the neighbor or the homes that were requesting absentee ballot. We didn't see them at all being near the success rate that they were promoting, and felt fairly comfortable going into the election that this was going to be a traditional turnout, nothing spectacular, a normal gubernatorial year. And we saw that they were not, you know, doing anything unusual in the absentee ballot request side of the equation.
So basically, whatever they were doing, you guys had been doing for a couple months anyway.
You could even say for going back as much as a year.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And we literally got started with our political plan. It was approved by all the interested parties in the early spring of 13. It was written in December of 12. Approved and reviewed January and February, and then made public in the spring. And so our offices getting open, our staff being hired, our volunteers being trained, our technology tool being built, developed, and on the street, you know, it was all during the 2013 year.
Is that because you had an election cycle under your belt that you were able to get moving on this quickly?
Well, clearly I had some experience, you know, that I learned a lot for, you know, the 2 years that I was the finance chair, able to observe while working with Ron Weiser and the team there. Then in 2011-12, when I had the responsibility as chairman, you know, I watched things that we did and brought some new ideas to the table. But I really wanted us to try to be a bit more bold, not go off the charts with excessive, you know, ideas, just do things that I thought we learned from what the Dems did in 12, do them better in 14, and also take our party in a direction with technology that we haven't seen before. And frankly, I think we led the way in the nation with some of the new technology tools that were developed with the RNC that we were able to use, and then those that we developed ourselves, which enhanced that which came from the RNC.
How do you think Lon Johnson did on the Democratic side? Obviously, that first 2 years you ran against Mark Brewer. This time you ran against Lon. How did he do?
I think Lon did fine. I mean, he's a skilled political operative. He knows the business. He comes with good experience. I would say that, you know, he set some pretty lofty goals for himself publicly. I think high goals personally and within your party operation is an appropriate thing to do. I'm not sure I would have set the bar as high as he did, and maybe he learned from that. But I think overall, he's a skilled guy. He's bright. He's got good experiences in the political world, and he's okay to work with. Mark Brewer is a whole other story.
Yeah. So how is that different? I mean, what did you see from Lon that you didn't see from Mark, or what didn't you see from Lon that you saw from Mark?
Well, Lon is very professional, very thoughtful. I think he's an individual that you can rely upon and trust. And Mark Brewer, on the other hand, is always got an angle, always got something he's going to throw at you out of left field. Sometimes to his credit, and sometimes not. I'm not sure it always works for him. It backfired on him often. Where I think Lon, you know, is a pretty steady, professional manager of the Democratic Party operation, and overall, I think did a good job for him. Just that, you know, these goals that he set publicly, I think, were a little too aggressive and out there. We were more stealth.
There was a column that was written in August or September, suggesting that the Republicans and the Democrats had cut some kind of deal on the Supreme Court to keep that race from being high-profile, nasty and ugly and a money suck. Was that in case true? Did you guys cut a deal on Supreme Court?
No, not at all. In fact, Lon and I both laughed at the article when we saw each other that, you know, where that was coming from, we had no idea. It certainly wasn't from the two of us. And, you know, he and I were both out to do our job and to win as many of our seats as we could. I think he knew with the incumbency in the front end, it's hard to flip the court. But we were pretty confident that we were going to keep at least two and go for a third. And there wasn't any arrangements that anybody could make that was going to change that.
Last question, Bobby Shostak. Obviously, folks are already interested in what you're going to do for 2015. Are you going to run for party chair again?
Yeah, look, I'm coming off of a very exciting year. It was a big lift for everybody in the party, from the governor and all of our volunteers and all the campaigns and our state party operations. I think we did a good job. We delivered. I was very excited to be in that role as chairman and have this kind of success. And I enjoy working with all of our folks, our volunteers, our activists, our campaigns. And I look forward to continuing. Now, whether that's going to be or not, I need some more time to talk it over with friends, family, advisors, and determine that. It's a little early right now. It's only been a week. So let's give it a little bit more time. We could talk about it in a bit.
Sounds great. Bobby Shostak, chair of the Michigan Republican Party. Appreciate the time today.
Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks for the crew, Sam Singh, for joining us here at the MERS World Headquarters. You've come here before, haven't you?
I have.
It's always a good time, too, when you can come by. You know what? Lauren didn't know that you were the world traveler who's has actually run in Antarctica before.
Yeah, I did a half marathon in Antarctica a number of years ago when I was in a little bit better shape, but it was definitely a great experience.
The world traveler. Now, have you run in every continent?
I have not. I've done, I think, four continents. I've run at least a half marathon.
I saw the Antarctica one, and then Kyle was just like, "Wow, you know, Sam Singh did that."
A little cold.
It was, but you know, the ironic part is in Antarctica when I ran was in March, which is their summer.
Oh.
And so it was 32 degrees, which actually, if the wind is decent, it's not that bad. That's not bad running weather. So.
Did you see any penguins?
Oh, absolutely.
Did they try and run with you?
No. they didn't run with us, but you definitely, as you were running, you would see them on the side and so forth.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. All right. Well, we don't have a song. This is still Edmund Fitzgerald now. There is no Penguin song, is there? Are there Happy Feet? We're not going to play Happy Feet.
Well, we all have to go home tonight and drink a porter, Edmund Fitzgerald porter.
Well, I was thinking about bringing it in. Can I bring a six-pack in?
This afternoon.
Lori's not in.
No, it's okay.
Until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.